Yeah, I think we're good.
Yeah, I think we can get started. This is 1:09 p.m. on January 30th, 2020. We are here for a records management committee meeting of the Arizona Board of Dental Examiners. Can we have a roll call, please? Present.
Here.
Here.
Dr. Morrow.
Here.
Dr. Schaefer.
Here.
Thank you. I don't believe we have any public members signed up statements. So we will directly move to agenda item review, discussion, and possible action on committee meeting. Minutes. Do I have a motion?
A motion to approve.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second to approve session minutes of November 26th, 2019 committee meeting. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? None opposed. Passes. Moving on to agenda item number four. Current statutes and or rules regarding the management of client records. So I believe the place where we left last time's records management committee meeting was to make a list of issues that we as the committee about, and the purpose of this meeting was to share possible solutions issues that you're facing at the dental board. So at this time, if it's agreeable to everyone, I would like to have discussion on item 4A, which is basically the list of issues that noted last time. So does any committee member want to share any specific thoughts at this point? I have my own thoughts, but I want to give everyone else a chance before. My thoughts on these.
I'll ask a silly question. With A1 requests for requirements to respond to subpoena, I'm not quite sure what that means.
Yeah, thank you. I believe that's requirements to respond to subpoena. So we were discussing, how issue subpoenas and what are the requirements that the board has in place for those who receive subpoenas to respond to them. I think we're having some static on the phone, so Dr. Morrow,
again, I'll mute it.
Mute and get it off mute if you. That would help quite a bit. Thank you. That helps. So I think the most productive way for us to proceed with making concrete suggestions to the dental board is to come up with solutions, because we know we have, as the board, struggled with some specific cases, but more generally speaking, we have struggled with the statutes that we have. We have struggled with the regulations that we have. We have potentially might have problems with substantive policy statements or directions to staff. But my understanding of the best way to proceed is to maybe start with the least or the most practical solution available, and maybe give the dental board collection of solutions that then the board can vote on. So the least intrusive, or the solution that kind of would mean the expense of least amount of resources for the board, direction to staff, right? As a board, we can just give direction to staff saying, okay, this is how we deal with these issues. The second kind of a level above that would be a substantive policy statement. Level above that would be regulations, and level above that would be statutory changes. So given those four options that we have, do committee members have any specific preference for one of those four? And maybe we can discuss, you know, how to proceed with one of those four options. And each issue may require a different solution. I mean, it's not that every issue on our list can be solved by just direction to staff. There might need to be statutory changes. Might need to be a reason.
I can't give specifics because I don't remember. I recently had some letters. I was not there. I was actually. The patient was fine, complained about someone else, and I was just the second person that she saw. My husband runs my office, and that the requests actually conflicted with each other. I could have him sort of bullet points because he wanted to make it better. Obviously, you get that thing in the mail and you have a moment of stress, but then when I realized who the patient was, I said, oh, this is a problem. And I asked him to handle it, and four different papers requesting things, and he pointed out that the requests actually conflicted with each other and he couldn't possibly do both. He called the board and helped them figure it out, but he said that if it comes up at this meeting, I should bring it up, that it's very confusing what is required when you get that subpoena. And I don't know if that's because of statutes. We kind of had that touched on that last time. But I will get his input because he's the one who remembers it. And I will, is there someone in particular I should send it to on this meeting? To you?
Or? I think, I mean, the best is to send it to one of the.
Send it to you, Mary? She's my new best friend.
Because then what we can possibly do is we can combine that and a packet, and maybe all of us can take a look at that. But I hear your, yeah, Ms. McLeod.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of these issues probably could be handled through directing staff, because there has been kind of a unwritten policy, if you will, of how things are handled. And I think as long as they are handled consistently, you know, if we make a decision on, you know, if a dentist does not have the records in their possession and how we are recommending that be handled, I think that sort of thing can be just directing staff if this is going to be kind of the policy or procedure. I don't think we need any new rule or statute to deal with something like that. So I think a lot of these can just be through staff knowing and understanding what, you know, the decision is and the expectation is.
Well, what is the statute now regarding possession of records after an associate leaves the practice?
Well, we have a couple of different statutes. One is in the Dental Practice Act, and one governs healthcare providers. In general, all healthcare providers, which states if you're an employee of a practice, you're not responsible for retaining the records, that it's the employer who is. Or if you have sold your practice, then you know, you're no longer responsible for retaining those records as long as you make, you know, certain
reasonable measures.
Measures that somebody is retaining those records.
What if your former employer refuses to release the records to you? Just, it feels like it. Are there any statutes requiring him or her to do so?
Well, that was one of the issues we've talked about before, where the subpoena comes to the former employee and they no longer have it. And so to me, if the dentist then responds back to the board and it's a response to the subpoena by saying, I am not in possession of these records, I'm not the custodian of the record, but you can find them at XYZ Dental Practice and here's the address or here's the dentist's name and address. To me, that should fulfill responding to the subpoena, and then the board staff would issue a new subpoena directly to whoever the custodian or whoever is in possession of those records to get them.
And then what happens to the dentist who's had the complaint filed against him or her if the second subpoena is not honored? He gets in trouble.
To me, it would be the custodian would get in trouble because they have the legal, by becoming the custodian, they have the legal obligation for those records.
So I think most or all of this list could be handled by direction to the staff and understanding of the board that we are investigating the complaint and the care that the complaint is about, not the records. The records are part of our investigation, and too many cases are backlogged because they become the investigation. The law does have some conflicting issues of, okay, you made the record, but you're not the one that retains the record, and what is reasonable measure when you sell the practice? Talk simply, if we change our focus for staff and the board to investigate complaints, not records, then subpoenas can have deadlines to them. People can ask for extensions to deadlines, but we can proceed with the investigation, record or not. We can't make records exist that don't exist. We also can't force people, no matter how many laws are in place, to give us something without taking unreasonable measures on our part. So people will respond to that, and I think for the dentist in the community, if we start investigating care that's been complained about and not records, they'll do what they can as best they can to ensure that the records are maintained, and they'll do the best they can to get records. And if not, then we have to make the best choice in the interest of the public, whoever's at fault for the disappearance of any record or non-recording of a record.
So I believe what I'm hearing is this work on proportionality. Right? I mean, in the sense that I get your point, Mr. Goodman, and that's a very valid point. I would agree with it. That if, let's say, I mean, I'm just thinking through some of the examples that came to mind when discussing issues. Let's say we have a complaint for some kind of a billing issue. If we, in that context, the complaint is not about the standard of care that the patient received, it's about some billing issue. In that context, if we have an outstanding subpoena, again, the extent of what we do in the subpoena some point needs to be proportional, reasonable, with what the complaint is actually about. So if let's say, you know, the records don't exist, if there's a virus that ate all of the records, talking of coronavirus, right?
Sure, sure. It doesn't do that yet.
Right, it doesn't do that. But for whatever reason, if the records are not obtainable, if the underlying issue is billing issue and not a health and safety issue, from the board's perspective, I would imagine the reasonable response kind of cabin the subpoena or that investigation to that issue, instead of saying, give me all of the records relating to this one patient, which I would assume typically how subpoenas is, if there is a complainant, we ask for records of that complainant. That's kind of the standard form language in most of our subpoenas. Not all of them. So So I believe in terms of implementing the statute, in terms of how internally we go about doing things, maybe the solution seems to be that, you know, it would be a direction to staff regarding with that initial issuance of the subpoena and following up with the subpoena, making sure we get the records.
Yeah, and some of it is right now at times, my understanding is, we aren't going to proceed with this investigation because we didn't hear back. Or we did hear back with some, we'll call it reason, some might say excuse, but reason or explanation of why the records don't exist or can't exist at this time for the board's review or investigator's review. If in the end we have standards and hold to them, over time we'll start to be able to be proportionate in how we deal with different parts of records not existing, and we can resort to having individuals come in for testimony. You can figure out at least all the information around a black hole without ever going into it. And right now we are in it when it comes to some of these records. We're willing to let the case go forever. And not intentionally, but through our actions, we're doing that.
Okay, a couple of...
Yeah, please.
This
yeah.
is two different yeah. issues, but to address Mr. Dinard's issue, I think it creates a problem to try to tailor a subpoena to specific things that this complaint may need versus what another complaint may need. I think that creates problems for staff in trying to figure that out. I think it creates problems in responding to a subpoena. So even though my clients may not like this, I think you send a subpoena out, you're supposed to respond with everything that you have on the patient that gets sent back in. Then if certain things within that packet are not needed to, you know, evaluate the issue in the complaint, then, you know, they're just not needed and don't have to be looked at. But I think it creates too many problems. Even your example of a billing issue, they would still need progress notes and maybe x-rays in order to prove that the work was done to be billed in the manner it was billed. So it's not just, you know, send me your ledger, your billing ledger, right, and we can decide this. So I think it makes it easier for staff. There's one subpoena that goes out in every case, and the expectation of how you respond to that subpoena should be the same in every case, no matter what the issue is. So that's how I feel about that.
So no focus, try not to go into selective treatments. Just here are the standards, let's follow them.
Yeah, to me, that's just a complete headache, because who's going to make that decision? Staff or non-clinicians? So they're trying to look at a complaint and say, oh, then we only need lab slips, we only need the billing ledger, and we need, you know, only the x-rays from December the 10th, 2019. I don't think it's their role to make those types of judgment calls on what is needed. So I think it's easier to send one out, and the expectation is you get everything back, and then the investigator or the consultant, when they review it, they can decide what's relevant or not relevant to the issues.
What about on the, it doesn't exist for any myriad of reasons? What about the concept of the board proceeding with the investigation?
Well, I think to me that needs to be on kind of a case-by-case basis. I don't think it happens all that often when you think that at least last year the board got over 300 complaints.
Oh, yeah.
So we're talking about a few, and I think then it should be looked at, because maybe it doesn't exist because the office burnt down. Maybe it doesn't exist because the dentist decided they just weren't going to keep them that long. Those are two very different scenarios of, you know, who should be held responsible, or if there should be further repercussions, that because you don't have the records, at least in my view,
So, it sounds like we're in agreement with the idea that, yes, let's choose that we can and should proceed, then the board has to decide how to proceed. That's part of why you have a board, right?
Yeah, I think there still needs to be some sort of response or an explanation of why you don't have the records. And it could be because I sold my practice. And Dr. Smith down the street has them, and you get them from him. Or it could be, again, you know, my computer got hacked, and we lost all of our data. And then you evaluate the situation from there. But I think you still try to proceed with an investigation on behalf of the patient who's filed the complaint, and whether it's then the dentist just has to testify from memory or their custom and practice, or maybe you can find part of the records but not all of the records, and you just kind of have to go within what you have under the circumstances.
Yeah, and I look back at, you know, the beginning of my career managing a medical practice. Very regularly, 20 years ago, we got records from another office, and it said, woman presents for well exam, all well, basically. It was two sentences, and you had a birth date on there and a name. And back then, cases were investigated. Patients, I'm sure, complained against those practices at some point, and the doctor had to then explain what did or didn't happen. And, you know, now we're in an electronic age where that same visit has four pages printed out. But whatever the case, if we can find a way to proceed and not stop the process, that allows the complainant to get the proper attention, the safety for the public, and it allows the dentist. Because you can only imagine for that dentist that the case goes on and on because we can't find the records or somebody can. So, yeah.
I mean, what I'm hearing is, so in terms of the reasonableness or proportionality, I completely agree that the subpoena needs to be, give me records relating to this patient, because once you start tailoring subpoenas at the staff level, I mean, things get out of hand. But I guess the proportionality and reasonableness comes into the picture at the time, I mean, basically what happens next, right? Because how about this? What if an investigation gets stalled for whatever reason, non-existence of records, records get burned, virus ate them, whatever. At that point, does it make sense for the staff to then come to the board and ask the board for what next? So it could be an agenda item on a board meeting, just like every other agenda item, saying, how do we proceed? And at that point, if the board votes to proceed with, you know, some kind of a contempt or some kind of a proceeding, or the board might vote to end the investigation at that point. But again, it's the board's decision at that point as to what is reasonable in the specific context of a case. Does it make sense to continue with the investigation, or does it make sense to stop the investigation? And then that would be, okay, now we have a complete record. Now we can have our investigator look at the records and is that something that makes sense to the committee members? Is that something that makes sense to staff?
I would have to go back to the first issue. I agree with you, there should be once member asked for records. You can't cherry pick which records, because that could present a bias against someone. So if someone tells me that I billed them for a crown and I only billing, you know, and all you ask for is my ledger, I want to send you my x-rays that show that I cemented that crown on the exact day that I billed it out for. So you can't cherry pick what you want on a subpoena. You ask for everything, and then it's up to the people evaluating the case, as well as the complainant and the dentist. I said I did. Show it. So I think that's a done deal.
Yes.
As far as dealing with situations where the records no longer exist, I think you brought up a very good point. Flood or an earthquake, or you know, I'm from back east, and I know dentists lost everything. They lost their records, they lost their computers, they lost their offices, they lost everything. Now, how could anybody be cruel enough to prosecute somebody for not being able to save the records after a natural disaster? On the other hand, if somebody's just sloppy, records is mandated by law for the number of years, or the ironclad agreement as to who the custodian of those records after employment termination. You have to use a little common sense here. A little bit of judgment. You said, in the absence of records, you make a decision if it's reasonable, if these records are lost, or it's unreasonable. Prosecute accordingly, and then you make a decision if the case can go forward in an unbiased manner. Doesn't that seem like common sense?
A lot of this will mean a change in expectations or timeline. And so I think as a committee, if we go back to the board with this concept of holding everybody accountable to the same subpoena standards, and then make sure that as a board and staff, that keeping timelines of the investigation happen, whatever the reasons records don't exist, then that becomes the simplest way to address all these matters. And it would very quickly be understood by the dental community that as a board we're going to continue to investigate, and some behaviors may change and some can't because they were burned up or what.
So in the past there have been situations where the investigation was completed pretty much, but then when it got to the board, there was a need to kind of, you know, reopen the investigation for whatever reason because, you know, someone realized, hey, I mean, we didn't look at this portion or we didn't look at that portion and maybe we need records on that. But I guess, I mean, all of that is to say that it's ultimately the board that decides when to stop the investigation. And if we could recommend to the board that that could be like a new process that we put in place is if the board, for whatever reason, I mean, if the investigation is going too long, or, I mean, it could be for any of the reasons that the board is reasonable. If we stop the investigation, it needs to be the board's decision, or maybe even some kind of a committee decision, which then, like, the ED terminates. Some committee recommends to the board, hey, we should, you know, stop the investigation here because if we continue going down this path of insisting that the subpoenas should be, you know, answered, it becomes disproportionate, it becomes unreasonable. So maybe that's the process you recommend to the board. I don't know if that's something that the committee members have any thoughts on, agree with, disagree with.
I think the board's right now very empowered to figure out exceptions, right? That's the whole process. We could have someone come in and we could be 100% positive as a board that person did what they were, you know, alleged to have done, and decide that there's no negative or adverse outcome, you know. So the board already has all that power to make exceptions. What we're talking about here is making a rule we actually follow as a group of staff and board And that's why I keep thinking, let's keep it that simple of, hey, here's the new rule, and it very quickly applies to the 99% of the exceptions we've been caught up in on this matter. And then when we need the genuine exception, we'll spend a lot of time on it. So anyway, I've spoken
so here's,
a lot.
Here's kind of like, so from a legal perspective, and Ms. Williams, please give us your thoughts on this. So at the federal level, if it's an internal agency practice, it doesn't need to go through rulemaking, it doesn't need to go through any of these processes. So if, from a legal perspective, if the board were to put on the, let's say, I mean, I'm just making this up, right? So let's say the board puts on its website that this is how we are going to proceed with subpoenas from now on. It's just an internal thing that we as the staff are doing. By the federal analogy, it wouldn't need rulemaking. It's not a substantive policy statement. It's just the board saying, this is how we have directed staff to handle this. I don't know if that's kosher under our Procedures Act or...
I am trying to think if I've ever seen an agency's internal policies like on the web. I know agencies have them. There's no requirement that you put them on. And I think, wasn't there an executive order that said you have policies on your website that they need to establish? Last year, there was an executive order. We can find that. But there isn't a requirement that they would be posted. You can have internal policies. A lot of boards have them written, unwritten.
So I've only ever seen like four different attorneys attend our meetings. I'm sure there are more, you know, but the group that dentists go to end up being similar attorneys. The dentists are well connected. And if we simply start enforcing the deadlines of our subpoenas, the normal dentist who's never been subpoenaed already expected that of us. The one that got subpoenaed 2 years ago on a medical records thing, and then it is still being discussed today as a, you know, long example type thing, they'll see a change. But for most everybody, if we make this change to what people should have expected of us in the first place, we don't have to put it on a website. We can just do it. And it doesn't need substantive policy. We just start saying, hey, we told you April 3rd, you didn't get it, so we're going to continue the investigation. You know, anyway, I know I'm simplifying it a lot, but at least it'll be a way that I'll be able to figure it out in the future, being on the board. It's simple.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
The only point I have to make on that is when you say enforcing a subpoena, I mean, if someone refuses to answer, I mean, the only enforcement is a contempt proceeding.
No. Right? I'm saying the shift, though, that we're investigating the complaint. So you could use whatever's in rule right now for penalties, things of that nature. But I'm saying don't get caught up on that. Continue to investigate the complaint absent the records. Oh, you sold your practice and you don't have the records and they lost it in a fire. We're going to keep our investigation going. So we enforce the timeline of the subpoena by not letting the explanation of lost records hold us up.
How do you continue an investigation that's fair when the dentist is unable to prove his or her innocence or guilt?
No fault.
Well, some of that the board would need to determine in that investigation and in their review of it, they would determine if there's a feeling that the dentist should have taken more reasonable efforts to maintain the records. But beyond that, you can find, we do lots of investigations in society of people who don't have records. You know, we take bank robbers to court and they didn't keep a good record of their bank robbery. Or we take people who make some other mistake professionally.
Let's
you know, and I know it's different in a chart. No, I don't think that these individuals
criminal investigations against practice claims that could just as well be spurious and based on retaliation as they are on true malpractice.
Oh, I fully agree.
That if there's true malpractice, a truly unbiased dental examiner, a clinician, needs to sit down and examine that patient. And I've seen plenty of cases where I don't need records to know that something not appropriate was done here, like the Mexican orthodontist. I've seen plenty of cases where patients have come up with stories that make no sense and the dentistry looks beautiful. I've seen stories, I do a lot of facial pain stuff. I've seen stories where people were walking around with facial pain that they got in a car accident 10 years ago and then had their wisdom teeth out and decided to blame the oral surgeon for their cracking jaw. I've seen all ends of the spectrum. I'm not saying all dentists are angels, because they're not, and you do have to protect the public from some very unethical people, but you can't just say we're going to continue without evidence. It kind of sounds, you know, yes, I agree. There should be a standard of reasonableness why a record doesn't exist. And then the complaining patient should be subject to a clinical exam and perhaps some new x-rays to either prove or disprove as best as possible. But, you know, glove doesn't fit, you can't acquit.
Well, so it was a poor example of someone who intentionally did something wrong versus professionals who almost always intentionally do it right. But with you on that, it's a poor example. The reality is we can and need to at times determine with all the information we have what happened, and if that information doesn't include the record, then maybe it does need to include the records of the next visit, you know, with another clinician, other things. So,
I believe to your point and to your point, I believe the discussion is once we have or not have records, how does that investigation occur?
Yes.
So if during that investigation, I don't believe, or at least I haven't seen, the patient having kind of the affirmative obligation to produce like a current x-ray or a current, you know, status of their teeth, some kind of a record from the complainant that shows, hey, this is how it is right now.
You don't believe that?
Well, I haven't seen anything in board records that we see as board members, but complainants have provided that kind of information. So I believe to your point, I mean, it's a different issue than just records management, in the sense that what you're suggesting is there needs to be some obligation on the complainant to produce records as to what the current status of their teeth or their mouth.
Exactly. So let us get the records of the next provider. Or, at no expense to you, we are going to do an exam, maybe by three or four different practitioners who haven't spoken to each other, double blinded. And, you know, we'll try and do this as fairly as possible, but it can't just be a he said, she said. And unfortunately, you know, I mean, we're talking about hypotheticals here. I don't know how many records get lost in fires or floods or earthquakes in Arizona. I know laws have to be cut and dry and statutes have to be cut. Board's discretion to move forward or not based on the available evidence in the case. If that's the case, then there needs to be equity to make sure the patient is heard fairly and the dentist is heard
fairly. This is a question for staff. I know Mr. Edmondson probably would like to speak to
this. So, if I can just give you kind of the perspective that I saw right when I came to work with the dental board, there was many complaints that were either getting dismissed or IRC committee was dismissing because we didn't review records. there was no records, and so this kind of goes to Mr. Goodman's point, that there was more investigation of where the records were than there were to the complaint. And I think Dr. Schaefer's kind of answered her own question on you can't justifiably discipline somebody if you don't have records to either support the discipline or exonerate them from not being disciplined. But you can get records from subsequent dentists to establish what the complaint actually was, and does it support what they're now saying because the subsequent dentist has supplied records. But there was many cases that what I saw a trend in was multiple people were getting dismissed because there just simply wasn't a record. And it was almost a get-out-of-jail-free card. You're like, I don't have records. And like, oh, can't do this. We'll dismiss it. And it was getting dismissed. And so, and some of them may have needed to be dismissed, but to me, I don't think an investigation was ever done. And there was no investigation because there was no records. And that's not an appropriate investigation. And I think that we can do the subsequent treating dentist. The other thing is oftentimes then we get the records, then the dentist that the complaint was against, they now want the records that we were able to get from, say they sold their practice. Now they want the records. And through the course of due process, they'll get those records, but I don't think that they need them at the beginning, and I think there's a ton of statutes that supports my opinion. I think at some point they would be entitled to these, but they don't need them to respond to the allegations in the complaint.
You mean their own, you don't think they need their own records in order to respond to the complaint?
No, because I don't think that, to Mr. Goodman's point, is we're not investigating the records, we're investigating the allegations of the complaint, and at some point they will get these records if it goes to a hearing. And there's multiple statutes there in your packet that even state that when you are entitled to get the records that we have, the majority of the records, I mean, we spend tons of time just copying and sending out the exact stuff that we receive from the dentist. You want to see all the stuff? We've sent you a copy of the complaint. We've asked you for a response. We have your response, and now we have your records, and now you're asking for the records. And all the records we have is the complaint, the response from the dentist, and the records they submitted. And we're sending back exactly everything they've already been given.
But the dentist or the dentist attorney does not know what you have until they get that file. Because that information is kept from us until after the response is put in. So that, I mean, me personally, that's why on every case I always ask for a copy of the complete board file. Because otherwise, I have no clue what you have or if you have records from other dentists.
Yep.
But to step back, I do think there's a huge due process, right, that a dentist should be entitled to have their own records and in order to respond to the complaint so that they know on what date they did what and what happened next. Because the patient's complaints many times are just completely wrong on the timeline or what treatment was done to what tooth and that sort of thing. So I have a real problem if there's an expectation the dentist is supposed to answer the complaint without their records, especially when the board's in possession of those records.
Well, the majority of complaints, and I hate to sound like I've worked in 100 different locations, but I have, and multiple boards, and that's exactly the way the majority of other professional boards operate.
Yeah.
It's completely incumbent upon the board to do an investigation, and at a point, there is a point where the respondent would get a copy of everything that the board has, and it's under, I think it's
3206. It's because Mr. Edmondson is correct. The duty to provide the investigative report happens at one stage.
Yeah, and you don't get anything before then. That's the right
investigative report.
Right.
So I think due process under the case law, due process isn't triggered until somebody can be, their rights can be effective. So I think during an investigative, and I'm not saying but the case law is until an agency can do something to you. So during an investigation when you're responding to a complaint, staff can't, you know, censure the dentist. So at some point, when it gets to the point where the board can take action, then you get the due process.
Which is 10 days before that hearing.
You can ask for it 10 days.
Yeah, which isn't much time, but you've already supposed to have put things in writing of what you did or what you said with this.
Yeah, and I'm just telling you what, telling the committee, I think you know what the statute is, but that's what the law requires. Some boards provide things beforehand, but it's not a denial of due process if you don't. It's just a policy decision on, you know, do you want to extend that courtesy or do you want to wait until the point when due process is triggered?
Yeah, and in a situation where the dentist is not able to get the records to respond to the complaint, why wouldn't the staff be willing to give them their own records in order to respond to that complaint? Other than saying, well, we don't have to because the statute's there, which is true, but it doesn't mean that you can't do it. So that's my issue with that. I've never, fortunately, had that happen.
Well, so I guess, I mean, I would imagine that situation occurs with a dentist does not have the records, it's the practice that has the records.
And up to this point, the staff has given me, you know, if that's been the case, they do share, you know, that dentist's, where, you know, the prior office, let's say, what they got from that prior office before, you know, my clients had to respond.
I believe, I mean, it's like those are kind of different issues than records management, because it's like it's almost like we need like an investigations committee to
double check
the investigations process.
Yeah.
Mr. Diner, can we just double check, since we lost Dr. Schaefer, to make sure Dr. Morrow is on there?
Dr. Morrow, are you still on the line?
Well, he should be able to hear
you if you were muted. If you would kindly unmute and let us know you're here. We are asking because of the forum issue.
Well, we need to make sure he's still. There's not a glitch. We can hear you. Otherwise, you don't have quorum anymore.
How many are on the committee?
Six.
And three won't do it then, huh? Need four.
Four.
I don't.
It's running. It's not muted.
Well, let.
No. From his end. From if he muted it on his end. He should be able to still hear us.
He can hear us, but we can't hear him. So he needs to confirm that he's still with us, otherwise we don't.
I'm here.
There you are.
Sorry, I got called away for a minute.
All right.
Before us, stay on the line, because if we lose you, they have to stop.
Got it. Keep going.
Don't walk away.
All right.
So I believe we can proceed. In terms of. Dr. Schaefer was mentioning and Dr. McLellan was mentioning. I think, I mean, those are issues, at least in my head, like, please correct me if I'm wrong, are more about how staff handles investigations versus records management, per se.
Yeah.
So I hear, those are all good points, but I don't know if, as a committee, we necessarily tackle with those issues given the mandate that the board has. But this could be at an appropriate time, like in a board meeting, like we might, you know, that for discussion. I don't know the committee meeting put something on the agenda for discussion.
For the board meeting? Yeah, you could direct staff to put that on the agenda.
Not the board member. So typically in a board meeting, a board member says, I want to discuss XYZ in the next board.
Yeah.
Would anybody from the committee can make a...
It's okay. You can recommend that that be put on future. You're fine.
Maybe we try to figure this issue out first before we make any new recommendations for future. And I know you had mentioned that maybe at some point with records or subpoena responses and records collection, if there's an issue that particular case goes, then gets sent to the board and saying, here's what we've run up against, and here's why we don't have any records. And then let the board kind of evaluate the situation and what to do next.
I believe so, because, I mean, I don't want to put the onus on staff to be making those decisions, because ultimately I don't want... So, for example, I mean, the one situation that keeps coming to mind was... Part of this, I won't mention obviously any specific cases, but a situation where there was a subpoena situation where the records could be obtained from another government entity, and that creates this whole issue with obtaining those records. So at some point, you need that line drawing, and I hear from the staff's perspective, it's not ideal to put staff in the position of kind of continuing an investigation when, you know, maybe they need more direction from the board. So I guess as a process, I would be completely on board with a process where if the staff feels stuck with any investigation or any, you know, records that aren't, that they are unable to obtain for whatever reason, then go to the board and ask the board what next. I guess, I mean, that's also to kind of check that these cases aren't getting dismissed just because someone said, oh, I don't have the records, right? So at that point, that reasonableness would be the board's decision. And if the board decides that, you know, some kind of, that holding someone accountable to actually obtain the records is the right course of action, then it would be. But is there anything in the statutes that prevent the board from maybe having a separate category on the agenda for these kinds of issues? Mm-hmm. So maybe that's the option then as a committee that we recommend.
So could it be that the item can be on the agenda, the complaint can be on the agenda, staff says we subpoenaed the records with a deadline of April 30th. It's May 3rd. We don't have the records. We have this explanation. It's still an item on the agenda. The board could then review the complaint and say, well, the complaint's this. Even if all that is alleged is true, we still don't think the dentist, and we could dismiss it. Or, okay, yeah, well, you know, now we're going to act. We're going to choose to call the dentist, you know, but actually have it just stay on the agenda as to keep it broad enough to actually move forward on the case rather than considered to consider, kind of. That's what I am trying to figure out, is how to keep proceeding versus extra, like, roadblocks.
Yeah, and I mean... I mean, I hear you, and it can't be that every investigation comes on the agenda like that, because there are, for every uncooperative records issue, there are maybe 99 people who actually do cooperate.
They just send them in, yeah.
So in terms of like the items on the agenda, it's only those very, very few cases where the staff is stuck on getting records, or there is some kind of a records issue that actually end up front of the board. I mean, at least that's how I where does that leave us with the discussion list that we have? Requirements to respond to subpoenas, licensees who are not in possession of records. I think, I mean, the second issue on the list is a bit different in the sense of we have situations where the actual dentists don't have the records. It's the practice that has the record. Maybe the practice got sold. Someone else has the records. Maybe the dentist is locked out of the practice because they didn't pay rent. So it's the landlord that technically has possession of the records. So in those situations, I guess, I mean, in terms of recommendation, it's just like any other recommendation. Just go and subpoena records from the person or entity that possesses the records. Is a valid response. And I don't have the records because.
So I have a suggestion, and this may be out of our scope, but I do know there are other states that when someone does not present the records, it actually is a Class B misdemeanor, and it goes through a legal proceeding and not a dental proceeding. I know that goes through a whole lot of other stuff, but I know that there are at least three other states that have a Class B misdemeanor if they fail to produce records. Just a thought.
You're the only dentist in this quorum right now. You know that, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Give me a hard time.
I don't think the statutes make it quite that focus on a dentist.
No, you'd have to go through the state legislature and a whole bunch of other stuff to get it done. But it's been I talked to somebody who said that that's what they do in their state.
It's good perspective is that clearly the expectation in those states is this is a serious matter, and hopefully with some of what we're discussing here through staff and the board's actions, we can heighten the seriousness of it and the timeliness of it with the dentist.
Yeah, I was shocked when they said that. I was like, wow, but you'd have to take it a whole different legal route. It doesn't go through the dental board.
Is the industry practice, and pardon my ignorance of this specific issue, is the industry practice when a dentist gets employed by an employer, is there some kind of a contract, a document that shows clearly who possesses the records? And as a board, do we need to see that document as... If that's true, then would that satisfy our requirement from the board's end? If someone comes and says, hey, here's the reason why I don't possess the records. Here's a document I signed saying the employer is in possession of the records, ask the employer, subpoena the employer for these records. Would that be satisfactory?
As far as industry standards, if there is a written contract for employment, and that does not always occur, lots of times it's just a verbal agreement. But the vast majority of written employment contracts between the dentist and the office that I see do have clauses in there that these are the patients of the office and the records are the property of the office. And But I don't know that we need to go that far to make them produce an employment agreement or whatever, because they don't always exist. I think if it's just, you know, the dentist responds by saying, you know, I was an associate dentist when I worked at this practice, when I treated this patient, I'm no longer there, I don't have access to the records, here's the name and address of where you can get them. I think that's an acceptable response without having to prove it up through an employment contract.
So any truthful statement that has independent indicia of reliability, so in a letter by the attorney, in an affidavit something.
Yeah, right. I think just a letter, because we already have the statute for all healthcare providers that say if you're an employee, you're not responsible for retaining these records. The employer is.
And most,
so we already have that statute that allows that.
Most times it's easy to be, oh, ABC Dental, I don't think there is one. They do an employment model, so yeah, this is, and the dentist is at some risk. If they send a letter in saying I'm an associate employee and they're not, that's not a good time to be making stuff up. So right now I think we can take the word.
And I mean, there is also a statute of limitations. Have the obligation of maintaining records only for so many years. Some of the not a dental practice related situation that I've recently seen, used with records within the past 6 years, but this entity got sold to someone else and that entity got sold to someone else. So the dentist doesn't, I mean, truthfully said that when I left practice, I was working at XYZ Inc. Here's the address, but when people tried to get records from XYZ Inc., that entity didn't exist. So they came back to the dentist. Came back to the licensee, let's say, and said, hey, like, you gave us false information. That can't be right either, because it's not the licensee's obligation, at least I don't think it's the licensee's, to see who is selling the practice to whom and keep track of all of that for 6 years. It just, you know, for kind of protecting themselves from the possibility that there might be a subpoena asking for records that some fourth entity owns at this point. So, in terms of the reasonableness inquiry from the board's perspective, I would imagine that kind of a chase for the records is not really what the board is going after. It's trying to resolve this complaint, as Mr. Goodman was. So that's quite a radical example, but I think it highlights the point that licensees in possession of records is an issue that keeps coming up in different situations, and I don't think, and again, please correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think the staff has any direction from the board at the moment other than if an issue comes up, bring it to the board, let the board decide, and then we can proceed.
I have a question for the staff. In us spinning our little scenarios up here of whether the office burnt down or the computer crashed or whatever, I know we recently had a situation in northern Arizona where I think three offices abruptly locked out, and I think at the last board meeting or maybe the board meeting before that I think was all resolved. Other than a lockout and the owner, a non-dentist owner, then just, you know, raises their hands and say, I don't have the records. What sort of situations are you seeing that are causing any problem of trying to get records?
So, and I'll let Miriam address this question as well, if I don't do this well enough. So I've worked for boards where you have to obtain records either through subpoena or a simple request because it's written into your rule that it's required or it's a unprofessional or conduct unprofessional. And unlike any other board, I have more difficulty trying to get records working at this board than I have anywhere. And you see some of the same, not the same people, I'll say, but the same entities say, oh, we had a coronavirus. Mm-hmm. It's constant. I don't have access to the server. Something happened to the server. We had a worm virus. And And I think that there's been like this, and I think what's happened, and I mean, I don't have any proof to prove any of this, but it's very suspicious to me that we're not getting records and complaints are getting dismissed. And so I think they're trying, and now that there's kind of a change, I think that that's where we're starting to get people perking up their ears like, oh, I got to respond to this. And I don't know, it's constant. And I've only been here a year. And it's just constant. It's mostly computer viruses or I'm not employed. And I think I know that your argument is always 2297, D or E or whatever it is, but and that's my biggest problem is that conflicts with the personal statute under, I think it's
32.1264.
Under the dental practice's own statute, say a licensee is responsible. So, but then they get 2297 to, I don't have records, I was an employee, and it is a mindless task to constantly try to get these records so that we can give them to you, or, sorry, to give them to somebody so that they can file a response, and or to an investigator to find out where more needs to go. And I think that the disservice, I can go back to Governor Ducey's executive order a couple years ago. That he said the number one reason why boards were created were to protect the public. How are we protecting the public if we can't even do a complaint? And these conflicts and these statutes are what's hindering complaints from being completed. We, in fact, tomorrow, I think, the board meeting, I think there's two or three cases that are on the board's agenda strictly regarding this matter alone because we can't get records.
So the issue for the board tomorrow is to at that situation to say, what are we going to do about?
So we see this happen in contracting, you know, people who build buildings and the like. The contractor will have a license, get enough complaints against that license, and another employee at that same company activates or just starts using the license they've had for 5 years, and they just bury the one that got all the complaints. As the person potentially hiring them, you're like, oh, look, they have a clean license. Well, the individual doesn't. That company name does. Well, with professionals, we shouldn't have any systems where the individual can hide behind a rule and us not have any ability to see their actions. And right now, the business entity and all that, and people jumping into the business is supposed to have it, at times is providing potential artificial protection. That the individual may have done something that we should investigate more fully. Hey, sorry, here's my reason. And so, if we change our course, then I think more of those people will start figuring out a way that their employer will get the records for them. If there's potential, hey, we're going to proceed, and, oh, you don't have the records? Well, we're going to use the evidence we have. Oh, wait, that's not fair. Well, more phone calls to them, that type of thing.
Has a civil penalty helped kind of wake up some people to be in compliance with subpoenas, do you think?
We've only handed out maybe two, and one of them was the one that you just referenced with the northern Arizona practice, where one guy just didn't respond at all. And so that wasn't even he didn't get penalized for failure to comply with the subpoena. He got dinged for
ignoring the process.
Completely ignoring completely. So of the very few. So I don't think so, but I don't know. I think it probably should start. Where I think the stricter thing is to, I mean, like what Mr. Goodman was saying, excuse me, that my voice sounds amazing, that it's a small community. I mean, there's a lot of dentists, but there's several of the same attorneys that come before, and they represent a lot of the same clients. And those clients get word out. And I think that And I don't think the role isn't to be with an rule with an iron fist, but it is to protect the public. And if you have to be iron for a bit, then I think that that's I think that should be the response going forward. Because is it 3208 or it's in your own statute 1208.
Yeah.
1208. There's one that's specific to failing to comply with the subpoena. The definition of compliance would be a little under question, because if somebody just responds, is that considered compliance? I mean, that would be, for the board to decide whether or not somebody complied simply by responding, like what Ms. McClellan was saying, that I don't have them. Me not having them is not compliance, but it's also, if you don't have them, you don't have them, and if we can get them somewhere else. But I think we probably really just need, from what I'm understanding, maybe write up a policy and procedure.
Yeah, I mean, on this specific issue, I don't think this is like a direction to staff kind of an issue. It seems to be a statutory conflict. Might need some statutory fix, or I mean, it could be a situation where we have Dental Practice Act statute that's more specific than the general 2297. But again, I'm not sure if that can be a situation that can be resolved by a substantive policy statement either. It could be, you know, maybe like a change, which again, yes.
The other thing that's happened that I've heard Miriam speak about and Ryan is a complainant will be so frustrated that the case isn't moving forward because there are no records. Then they threaten or they have called the media to complain about the dental board and how we're not doing our job. So that's another issue that we've also had to face.
Yeah, and we're better if we proceed timely. Even if we don't side with the complainant, if we say, hey, we're dismissing the complaint, at least they've got it addressed versus waiting 6 months or a year because of, oh, no, it's the employer, it's a server, it's a virus.
Absolutely. The other complaint that I've heard too commonly is the office moved. And they don't notify the board that they are moving. Therefore, whenever we do send a subpoena, it gets sent back to the office because no one's there. So that's the other excuse we've heard, too. And I'm sure Marion's heard others.
Yeah. I could tell you more. But we've heard excuses like dental divorces. Yeah. Like I've had a bad patch in breaking up with my partner. And it made it, in fact, I can recall cases right now, I'm not calling names, where the dentist has moved on and the office, because of some bad blood, so to speak, is not cooperating at all. So
I'm in trouble.
Yeah. So in those cases, we've had to subpoena the office and get it directly from the office because the office wanted no contact with the professional.
Yeah, but
and that's worked out that then the office does respond to your subpoena.
I'd like to say yes. I'm looking at my staff now.
Yeah, well, but in this hold people accountable to a subpoena deadline, the dentist gets a subpoena, says, look, I don't have them. We had our breakup, our divorce. You then subpoena the next, and they produce them or they don't. And if they don't, then, okay, dentist, this is the information we have. We need to proceed with the investigation. So they can take their own civil actions as well. They don't depend on us.
If you pardon, I say one more thing. We do have a situation where we couldn't get records at all because the dentist went out of state, the dentist was terminated, and we've had to ask the complainant, show us proof that you went there. And the complainant has had to show us proof in the form of credit card statements, etc., etc. And this is what we will have to present to the board. That the complainant, this is all the proof the complainant has, but we have no records.
I mean, was there a reason given on the dental side or the office side why there were no records?
Oh, I forgot to say that. The office no longer exists.
So
the dentist was terminated, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And then the office soon afterwards no longer existed. So whatever we have is all we have. And then now we have to rely on the complainant to prove that you did go and you did pay for services and to produce whatever documents were there.
All right, so I have another question then that goes along with this. What about the do-it-yourself smiles with the ortho? You know, they don't have records. They're doing dentistry, you know, with no notes. How does this work? You know, there's a lot of problems that are coming with that.
Yeah, well, I think the point there is, I believe what the industry standard is, it's not in the record. So if it's not a situation where we can't obtain records, if we have records in front of us, and if the record showed there wasn't any filling, and then it is saying, well, my filling is messed up, that's the kind of factual discrepancy that then the investigator should be able to look at and make a specific recommendation to the board. But it's not a records management issue in the sense that you did obtain the records. Whoever did provide the records, but there is like a factual discrepancy between what the complainant is saying and what the licensee is claiming.
I think that happens in every case, yeah. And that's a completely different issue,
right.
I think, than whether the board can get their hands on the records or not.
Yeah. But I think on the second point, the licensees were not in possession of records. What I'm hearing is it's not a situation that can be resolved just by direction to staff. It needs to be one of the other three. Given those three options, if as a committee we can come up with one or maybe even two recommendations for the board, that's kind of the direction I'm leaning in, unless you know the committee members have different views.
I guess I have a little bit different view of if the licensee is not in possession, why can't they just say that and explain why and say where the records are, and then the staff issues a new subpoena to get those records. And that would be more just a internal policy to do it that way.
And then if they get the records from the former employer, great. If they don't, we still need to proceed, right? I mean, we've done
I think that's when the issue then comes to the board.
This is the info
we
have. Yeah.
This is, you know, this is what the license
I don't think that addresses your situation where the entity doesn't exist, the dentist moved out of state, can't be reached. But I mean, I think that's such a one-off situation.
It's not always going to be able to
be. But I mean, so those kinds of situations, I would imagine, would need to be in front of the board. You know, what the facts of the case are. Just makes maybe board meetings longer than they have been. But that job is.
Firing squad.
Okay, that's fine.
May I suggest that as far as this committee's purpose, I don't see us getting any further with another meeting. I don't know if we can get to a consensus recommendation today, but I don't think doing this again will help us get to a consensus either. So if we can't get to one today, I'd suggest that today's the last meeting either way. Just my take on it is we've covered the issues and covered them again today, and hopefully we can come up with a consensus. My take.
Can I second that?
Yeah. It wasn't a motion, but I'll make it one. Yeah.
Want to say, well, so my thought was, I think we have at least one concrete solution. Staff is stuck with any subpoena issue. And we could do it as a direction to staff that comes up to the board. And then the board decides. I think that's a solution that resolves many of these issues. I mean, I could see all of these issues come up to the board in that posture, and then the board deal with it. So I would feel comfortable making that one specific recommendation. I don't think as a committee we need to make recommendations on everything that we need to consensus on one specific recommendation or a few recommendations as a committee. But the other thought, in addition to that, that I had in mind was at some point, I believe as a committee we should be reporting to the board in some kind of written fashion. It could be maybe the minutes of the meeting or submission that we as a committee put together, and then the board gets to look at that and see all the arguments that were discussed, all the issues that were discussed. So those are kind of the two ways that I had in mind. In terms of another records management committee meeting, I would say we could keep the committee inactive until an issue that comes up. But other than that, I kind of second what Dr. Morrow was saying, what Mr. Goodman was saying. And, you know, discuss all of these issues, but we at some point. Seems like we have one recommendation. There may be more in the future, but I don't know exactly if that would warrant the first thing or if that could be done on paper. Of the meeting of the boards. So I guess those are kind of the options that we have.
Probably need to make a motion recommending. Yeah, you make. Or just. Yeah, so if you have a recommendation on how the policies or procedures should be changed, then that becomes your motion. You move to recommend that the board consider changing the policy, directing staff, however you want to word it, but it's you vote on a recommendation.
Well, I'll take a shot at it. I move that we encourage, are we allowed to encourage?
No, you recommend.
I move that we recommend to the board that they direct staff to have the investigations be about the complaint and protecting public health, and not just about, or not as heavily focused on getting the records of the care. In doing that, have standards that they hold each person subpoenaed to, and continue to proceed with the investigation after the deadlines of each subpoena.
And they're stuck.
Yeah, and it, with the ability to come back to the board, but have the focus be on investigating the complaint. Yeah. A lot of words.
A lot of words.
Do I have a second?
Tomorrow seconds.
All right, we have a motion. Any discussion?
I think, can I?
That's some of the beauty of having board members that understand dental care far better than me, is that they can weigh that evidence in of, okay, now we have records from the next dentist. We don't have the treating dentist records. We can't make these assumptions, or we shouldn't make those. You know, so it allows it to proceed, though, and the dentist and hygienist and public members all can weigh in, business entity can weigh in and make choices, but not have the roadblock. So that's the reason to have that be the emphasis of the recommendation to the board.
And maybe to, do you, Mr. Goodman, do you mean by not by investigating the complaint, not the subpoena, or not the records, is your focus on that is because a subpoena is just one investigative tool?
Yes, the subpoena is one investigative tool, and the records is one piece of information in the investigation.
So is your recommendation...
It's a major piece, no question.
...to direct staff to proceed with the complaint investigation, even if they're not getting a response?
Yes, that's my...
Not to stop it.
That's my intent with...
That might be a better way to phrase it.
Yeah, holding to the dates of the subpoena, then no longer can it be acceptable to, oh, we didn't get an answer, what do we do? That, yeah.
So just to proceed, even though you're
proceed
not
with
getting
the investigation.
A response. So maybe it's better to word it that way than focusing on the complaint, not the records. I think we know what you mean. I don't know that that's going to be that clear.
In like written down, yeah, it makes sense, yeah.
I think I agree.
Oh, I'm good.
Well, I...
Yeah, you're going to have... In the end, if you're directed by the board, you'll need to understand it.
So what I have is... recommend to the board that you accept that investigation be about the complaint and not record. Standards to go, we uphold the standards, we maintain the subpoena timeline. If staff is stopped, those that we can have.
I would change my motion to that. I can't do it with a beautiful accent, but yes.
Well, I think that's what she's repeating, what you already said.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. Wow. I didn't say it that beautifully. So, wow. Yes, I'll stay with that.
Well, I guess the issue is the complaint versus
the first.
Yeah,
part.
Yeah. So
the first part.
Yeah. So to your point, Mary, you're saying if I can amend it to focus on proceeding with the investigation, not complaint, or just proceed with the investigation to have the focus of the staff to be to proceed with the investigation. Yeah.
And not on compliance with the subpoena.
Yeah, not on, yeah, exactly.
Because the board can always address non-compliance with a subpoena.
Civil action, yeah, or civil penalty.
No, it's unprofessional conduct if you don't comply with a subpoena. And that can always be an allegation that's added to a complaint. Or you can deal with it in a non-disciplinary matter. But it's a separate ground for discipline or non-discipline.
Yeah, whereas right now we're allowing it to have its own. So how would that read now if I said it as nicely as you do?
Do you want somebody sick to read it this time?
All right, let me make an attempt at this. So the motion is that the committee recommend to the board that they direct staff to proceed with the investigation and not, one moment, I'm sorry. Motion is that the committee recommend to the board that they direct staff that the focus of the investigations would be to proceed with the investigation and not noncompliance with a subpoena. In doing so, they uphold the subpoena timelines and, if stuck, submit the matter to the board.
Yeah, I'm.
In other words, it can't be like an ED termination or dismissal.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's where they could. Yeah. Is that, but at that point, would that be much different than what we're doing today? Because right now it's, hey, sorry, board, we can't proceed. We don't have the records. That's how I understand it.
Well, I think legally at that point the board can choose to dismiss it or say we want you to try X, Y, and Z and see if you can get information that way. But once the board reviews results of investigation, the standard is if there's not sufficient evidence to support the allegations, they can dismiss it.
So we would still continue with the investigation and bring you all the material minus those records?
Yes.
Then,
yeah, and that's where I think we maybe don't include it. If stuck, I think we have it be proceed.
Yep. And then ultimate, because that's, I mean, it has to go to you guys anyway, or the board, excuse me, for final adjudication. So ultimately, it's going to go that way anyway, so we'll be stuck or not. You'll still get it.
Yeah, and then we tried this subpoena, it didn't work, but this one did. And we have the information in front of us. Or, yeah. Well, we have what we, yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, I would say rather than the if stuck, proceed with the investigation and present
the results
to the board. And
including failure to uphold the standards or something like that.
Yeah, they can include. That would be part of a point of info.
Oh, good luck to us. This will be good.
Dr. Morrow, does that work for you with your second?
That sounds good.
I hear suction.
No, we're good.
I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
It's nitrous.
Do you have a motion and a second? Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say none opposed. There is.
Awesome.
work, everybody.
In terms of like, possible items for future meeting agendas.
Hold on.
My next question is, we have that written out so we can present it before the board. Are we going to do it tomorrow?
March 6th.
We missed open meeting for tomorrow, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That's fine.
I think, I mean, that was agenda 5, discussion and possible action items for agendas. What I have in mind is, and I guess it's the chair's decision to, or you guys have some point. What needs to be done with the records management? Possibly meet again. All these other issues, but again, I don't know if that's the way Ev's thoughts are on that.
Maybe after March 6th. I wouldn't say dissolve. Even if I were recommending on it was March 6th, I would say keep the committee just for a little bit longer, just in case, because then you don't want to have to form another committee.
Yeah, and if I mean, I agree, because if there's any records management issue in this kind of a setting, it's more efficient even from the board's perspective. So I don't think there's any action item. Next committee meeting dates, item number 6. And I guess it depends. March.
Yeah. TBD.
Right. Adjournment. Adjourn for today's meeting. Do I have a second?
Second.
Aye.
Aye.
And opposed, motion carries.
Thank you.